And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio, and tonight is, what is it, Thursday, February 11th, and, well, as always, I love having somebody in the studio, and, well, it's one of my favorite people. It's Tracy McBurney, and, you know, we always love when Tracy comes because she really kind of shakes up what's happening and where we're going, and so, you know, I'm looking forward to this as much as, well, I'm looking forward to this, so welcome, Tracy.
Hi, good to be here.
Okay, so I know that we're going to talk a little bit about Ho'oponopono, and I know that you've taken this to a level that I don't think anybody has ever taken it to, so I am excited and looking forward to hearing what we have to say about it.
Well, first of all, I'm not so sure that I've taken it to a level that nobody's ever taken that to, but thank you for that, but I'm thinking not so accurate. In fact, admittedly, I've never taken a course in it.
But well, that doesn't surprise me.
I think that's the beauty of this, is that you can practice this. It is so simple. I think that people have a hard time getting their head wrapped around it because it is so simple.
Right.
So, really, Ho'oponopono... is obviously not my invention at all. I really wish I could be credited with that.
Right.
In fact, I can't remember the name of the woman who was a quite aged at the time, who was a Hawaiian shaman who taught Dr. Holen this technique. But basically, this technique is a real understanding, like a microscopic acceptance of the oneness of the all. So as she taught this to this man, that's really what she was putting forward, is she was teaching him that when he was in the presence of anything or anyone that was having a problem, that was in resistance, that was in some level of separation from love, from light, from the oneness, that this was a problem of the oneness. This wasn't just this person's problem, because he was now witnessing this problem. This problem was now in his face. Mm-hmm. It was his problem. And he could choose to heal that problem within himself. And in healing that problem within himself, others would be healed in the oneness. The way this story goes is that he was, I believe, a psychiatrist in Hawaii, at a prison. Mm-hmm. He was an administrator at that prison. He never had direct contact with these prisoners who were mentally ill, very mentally unstable people. And over a process of 5 years, never meeting these prisoners, he read their files, he read their problems, he cleaned himself of what he now saw as his problems.
Because they were in his...
And right. Healed those prisoners to the point where that penitentiary is now closed. And those prisoners have all been released into society. And as they follow their progress, none of them have reoffended. All of them have been returned to a completely normal mental state. It's actually astounding.
Yeah. That really is astounding. But I mean, I've heard of this before, and I've heard lots of people talk about it, and I've never heard it from that perspective, even though I believe that that's what they, maybe what they're trying to achieve. I don't know that I've heard it come from that place. I don't know that I've heard it come from that oneness, and I don't know that I've heard it come from, because mostly people are saying, you know, the four statements about themselves or to the other person, and not so much that reflection, that mirror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but everything is our mirror.
Yeah.
So every time I think about this oneness, I always see, and I'm not a particularly visual person, but every time I'm trying to explain this idea of the immensity of the oneness, I always go to this vision of the Horton Hears a Who movie, where... all you see is this sea of clover, and he's looking for the clover that has the dust speck talking that has the problem. And he's trying to find the clover that has the problem.
Right.
And the problem is his problem. And he's trying to help with that problem. And he absolutely has taken full responsibility for that problem. And he's looking in the oneness. And so when I hear myself try to describe it to somebody, I think of myself as one of those pieces of clover.
Right.
And that the person in my office is the dust speck on the clover telling me about the problem that's happening in their little world. In their little universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that little universe is having a problem. And that problem is my problem, because that problem is on the clover and I am a clover, and it is my problem because a clover is having a problem.
Right.
So I like it because when a mother, predominantly mothers, not so many fathers, come into my office and they're talking to me about their 7-year-old child and his struggles at school, their 12-year-old daughter and her problems with boys, what I can show them is, tell me about that problem. Your daughter's not in the room, but her problem is your problem, and her problem is my problem.
Mm-hmm.
So by virtue of the fact that we're having this discussion, it is my problem. And I am perfectly willing, because you feel overburdened by this problem, so much so that you're coming into my office to share it with me, to say, take it from me, help me to make this better. I just want to take on that problem and take full responsibility for that problem and take that burden off you. And reconcile that problem, which is my problem. It's my problem now. You just told me it's my problem now. Oh, I just became aware of a problem in the oneness. Thank you for letting me know about this problem in the oneness of us all, of all universes. Thank you. I can deal with that problem. Let me do that for you. I can deal with that problem. It's my problem. And Ho'oponopono is actually very simple. The first step is to take full responsibility for the problem that has just entered your energy field. And then to literally start the cleansing process by saying, forgive me, I love you, I am sorry. You are speaking to the divine matrix. You are asking for forgiveness from that divine, that universe, that source, that God, that Allah, that Krishna, whatever you want to call it. You are asking for the forgiveness for your separation from this love. For your forgetting your connection to this love. For your, I think, really, now we're going back to where I was last time I was speaking here or coming here. You are apologizing for your incapacity to comprehend the possibility of unconditional love.
Hmm.
So you're apologizing for the conditional mess that you just got yourself into. You're apologizing for the conditional mess that we all have gotten ourselves into, and all of the conditions that we place upon ourselves and in our family lineages. And we call that love. We call that connection. We call that belonging. We call that what has to be. You're apologizing for forgetting.
Yeah.
And for being separate. You are saying, I am sorry. Powerful words. I am sorry, or I apologize. Much deeper energy than I'm sorry. Don't ask me why. I am sorry. I apologize. Very powerful statements. I love you is almost like the forgive me, I am sorry, is like you are asking the divine to draw out from you that toxin, much like toffee pulling from inside of you. and taffy pulling from the person that's in your office or your friend that's in the washroom who doesn't even know you're doing this as you're hearing about this problem. That you are pulling, if you are a chiropractor, you are pulling from your client who is lying on that massage table. You are pulling from them this negative energy. And you are drawing it into you. And with I love you, you are literally dispelling it up through the crown of your head and out. In other words, take it, take it, take it. I love you is like the finish from the pull of taffy into the air. Finally, you finish with thank you. Thank you. Thank you descends new programming. Thank you descends new understanding. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the understanding that I have failed to have about this for all these years. Thank you for the understanding that I have failed to know about me and my relationship with love for all of these years. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping me to remember unconditional love can live here. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping me to heal this. Thank you for helping me to recover from this. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And every thank you descends a divine energy down into the matrix of us, into the being of us, into the bodies of us, and it starts to change the toxic world that we've lived in. I love the technique because even when I do not know how I am this problem, I can't even compute it consciously. I just know it's true. Mm-hmm. As I start to do the work, I get an insight. I get a level of clarity that comes as I've said these thank yous for understanding. Then understanding comes. And then I get it. And then I get it. I get it. I get where I belong in this. I get how I, too, am a part of this. I get how it is played out in my life. But I couldn't get it before I started. And even if you can't get it, it doesn't matter. I remember, it was only a couple of days ago, huge judgment I was having to a place that I had gone to pick up a remedy that I had ordered, that I was waiting for patiently, and it's a remedy that the naturopath that I'm working with really wants me to have, and it's kind of like, I want you to have these two homeopathic remedies taken like this, and then you take this tincture on top of that, you do that twice, and this condition is moving. But I've been waiting so long for this thyroid remedy to come. So I get up to this place to finally pick it up, and it's not the right remedy. Mm. I've asked for it in liquid. Liquid was cheaper, but energetically it was better for me. They gave me capsules, probably four times the amount that I needed. And it was going to be three times the price. And I just looked at this girl and said, what's going on? Like, I don't understand what's going on. I very distinctly ordered this with this gentleman, the manager, and I thought I was clear, and this isn't what I want. And she said, well, we can reorder it for you. It's going to be 2 weeks. And I'm just looking and saying, you know, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. This was a mistake made by you guys, and I think that I shouldn't be on some roster to be on your next supplement run 2 weeks from now. I think that, you know, somebody should be doing something about this now. And she said, well, I'm going to have to go get the manager. And I said, well, that's great, because it's the manager that took my order. So he came, and clearly he was a little flabbergasted, and he wasn't really saying much. But he said, well, there's nothing I can do. I'll only be able to put you on the roster, and it will be here in 2 weeks. And I went, you know, that's just not okay. But I could see that he wasn't giving an inch. And then I said, you know, I'm not so sure that I want to do that. I think I'm going to have to call another establishment and see if this could happen a little bit quicker. Can I have your card in case I need to phone you back? He took me to the front of the store to get the card. And then I thought, I can't resist saying this. It was my pride that had to say this. Carolyn Meese would call that one of the seven deadly sins. It was my pride that had to say this, because at this point I was fuming. This man was going to get away with something without even an apology.
Right.
And I just thought, no, this is not right. This is not right. I don't deserve to be treated like this. This is not right. So I very nicely looked into his eyes and said, this isn't okay. Not even an apology from you. I understand that this might not have been your mistake, but you are the manager and representative of this establishment. And I can't believe that you are letting me leave today without the product, paying for parking when you should be paying for my parking. And not even an I'm sorry. Not even an I'm sorry from you. And he just stared at me. He just stared at me. And I left. Oh God, Lori, I was so angry. I was so angry. And you know what? I couldn't even really get the whole understanding. This man had gotten to me. That was clear. He had absolutely gotten to me, to the point where I could spit nails as I left. What I could get is that I was angry at him for not taking responsibility. And it was a deep anger, really deep anger. All the way home, driving down Don Mills, all the way down the DVP, I'm just repeating in my head, not really knowing anything else that this is about other than I'm angry at people who are not taking responsibility. This man's problem is my problem. I'm not taking responsibility must be an issue within myself. And I just started to clean. Forgive me. Forgive me. Forgive me. I love you. I love you. I love you. I am sorry. I am sorry. I love you. I am sorry. I am sorry for all of the times I have not taken responsibility in my life. I am sorry. I love you. I am sorry. All the way home, I cleaned. I must have said this, 500 or 600 times. If you were driving next to me, you would have thought, what the hell is she doing? Doesn't look like she's singing a song. I was a little bit less angry by the time I got home. And then there was another jab. And there I was, flailing in that anger again. And there I am again. Forgive me. I love you. I am sorry. I'm taking responsibility for this now, this problem, because I know it's my problem because it stabbed me in the side. It's got me angry. It's got me upset. It's got me emotionally moved. It is my problem. I am absolutely unclear what my problem is other than I'm angry and I'm wanting to be angry and I just start to clean. Which is what he says. He frustrates people, I think, in workshops, because I've listened to some of the CDs, because people ask question after question after question about how to resolve this and how to resolve that in their life and how do you deal with this relationship. And he just keeps looking and saying the same thing. Clean yourself. Clean yourself. There's only one person in the room. Their problem is your problem. Just clean. Just clean. Just clean. It really is quite astounding. I woke up in the morning. I could still feel a little tiny touch of that anger. I got to school to teach a class. I was trying to explain this concept of oneness to the class. And I started by saying, because we were talking about the law of one that day. So I started by saying, I'm angry. I tried to clean it all up before I would come in here and spew it all over you, so that any of you sensitive people might feel it coming from me. But I got to tell you, I'm going to fess up. I'm angry. I'm less angry than I was yesterday, but I'm still angry and I'm still working on it. The people in the first three rows of this classroom, you're within 8 to 15 feet of me. You are right connected to my anger in my auric field. The rest of you, you're just connected to them. So you're getting it second fold. everybody in this room is being affected on some level by my anger. Some people more than others, so I am apologizing to you ahead of time. I haven't been able to successfully clean that all up before I came into this classroom. And then the most astounding thing happened, because you have to remember, one of the things in Ho'oponopono that I like to ask for in all the thank yous is thank you for new understanding. Thank you for new understanding. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Divine, for a new way to live. Thank you, Divine, for a new way to be. Thank you, Divine, for a new way to be in conflict with another. Thank you, Divine. Thank you, Divine, for this new understanding. Thank you for this new understanding. Well, I got it in that moment. I got the new understanding. While I was teaching this class, I was inspired. I was inspired to let go of my anger, to replace it with the positive emotion that I wanted to be in, because I really, really, really enjoyed this class. And I really, really, really wanted to do the best that I could do to impart knowledge to this class. And I was truly inspired. So I got it. The understanding was I made a choice point decision to stop being angry. Just to stop being angry. Just to literally say to myself, I don't want to be angry anymore. I don't want that. I want this. And I can't be in both places at the same time. Not really. And be present. I can be in both places at the same time if I take that anger and bury it somewhere, so that the anger is not that present, but I am. And we do that a lot.
Mm-hmm. And we do that a lot.
We do that a lot. But I didn't want to bury it. I wanted to resolve it. I wanted to reconcile it. And what I really got was the Divine had been trying to help me to reconcile that. But the one piece of understanding that I really had to understand was I was really interested in being angry. I wanted to live in anger. I wanted to stay angry for as long as I wanted to stay angry. I don't know if I would go so far as to say that I have been addicted in the past to being angry, whether that's by burying it or being in it, but not so that people would know.
Right.
Not so that people would know. It's just the angry little voice maybe in the back of my head. But out here, nobody would know. The only people that might know would be the people that might feel something going on under the surface. I don't think I'm so much like that anymore, except I was very surprised at the level of anger that was brought up in the last 48 hours and my decision to want to stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really neat thing to be able to have that classroom experience where the choice point was there and the understanding was clear. I wanted to choose something else. I was tired of being angry. Tired of being angry at that man, maybe tired of being angry at myself. I think really at the end of the day, myself. Mm-hmm. Tired of being angry at myself for all of the days, years, and months that I haven't taken responsibility in my life for one reason or another. And I investigate that with clients a lot these days, because when I teach them this, they're kind of like pulled back a little bit. It's like, well, what do you mean take responsibility? Well, I don't want to be blamed for this. I hear that a lot. Yeah. I don't want to be to blame for this.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first clearing we have to do is to ask the Divine, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. That's my problem. Forgive me. I love you. I am sorry that I would think inside of my mind, in my soul, in my beingness, that to take responsibility spiritually meant I was to blame. Forgive me, forgive me, forgive me for believing that. For not knowing what taking responsibility really means. mm-hmm. what it can really be like. But for us in our society, you take responsibility for something and you're persecuted.
Right.
You take responsibility for something and you're blamed. You take responsibility for something and it's a lawsuit. You basically do the integrous, honest thing. And then how are they going to take you down? Like, it's been really interesting to look at the dynamics of what's gone on here in North America and maybe even over in Japan right now, right? Mr. Toyota, whose first name I don't think I even know, who is taking responsibility at very high levels for what's going on in his company. And what's the price that he pays for that? What's the price that the company pays for that? Honda just today recalls on their cars. Maple Leaf Foods. I watched that man who I just did so many prayers for. The man who stood up from Maple Leaf Foods, whose name I forget. His face I do not. Taking responsibility for this listeria outbreak here in Canada. Clearly tormented as he's taking that responsibility. I don't know. I mean, let's discuss it. To me, it's like I want to work with that company that takes responsibility at that level. I want to buy Maple Leaf Foods because they take responsibility at that level. They have that level of integrity. I'll buy a Toyota car because they have that level of integrity. They're not hiding something under the carpet or sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah. Responsibility is a big one. It's one of those areas that, you know, when you do get it, you know that it's empowering. But at the same time, when we're so good at not seeing, at not understanding exactly how much responsibility we have in our lives. Like, we don't get it. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't.
No, we don't. And I think one of the reasons why we don't is because we don't really recognize at what level this free will choice that we have operates at. It's everywhere. You know, we've had this discussion in classes. It's like, well, when do you think your free will kicks in precisely? I'll just show of hands, please, to everybody in the class. Do you believe that you have free will to make a choice to come here to go to this school? And it's like, well, a resounding everybody's hands are up. Do you think you had a free will choice to choose that boyfriend? Was there a free will choice for you to get married? Couple of hands don't go up. Did somebody interfere with that free will? Yes. Did you allow it? Yes. Which means because we allowed it, there's a part of us that never really believed that that was ours to have, always ours to have. So then the question out to the class, well, at what time frame do you think that free will kicks in? Do you think that free will, you're not given free will until you're 16, 17, 18, 25? You're not given free will until the frontal lobe of your brain is fully formed at the age of 25 and you can see consequences for your actions? I do believe in past lives, and I do think that our free will has operated always. I think we had the free will to choose the family that we chose. The vessel that was forming as the zygote that we chose. I think we had the free will to choose the parents, the timing. I think we had the free will to choose it all. Mm-hmm. I think our soul had the free will to choose what it saw its greater and higher purpose was. And I think it left it in the hands of our guides and said, I'm going to get really lost down there, I think. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of darkness that I'm going to have to navigate through. So there are a couple of key places in that map where we've made some plans that if I get really lost, you'll just take me out. I've given you my free will choice to take me out of that situation. If I get really lost, take me out by 2010. Not take me off this earth. Take me out of that bad situation. Do what you need to do to take me out of that. So I think free will operates from a soul level before we ever really incarnated here into a physical body. And I think it also operates here on this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two clash every once in a while. The free will down here when I'm not so clear versus the free will up there when I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's all taking responsibility.
Yeah. Choices, responsibility.
And choice points. I like that. Virginia Martin, who I work with, a naturopath, she talks about it all the time, choice points. The choice point that we have. I had a choice point. I saw it clearly. I had a choice point. I was walking up the aisle following that man to get that business card, and I had a choice point. I was either going to put my pride in my back pocket, claim grace, ask for the angels to come and calm me down, or I was going to stare him down before I left and give him a piece of my mind. Choice point. I chose the devil on my shoulders that day and I gave him a piece of my mind because there was an arrogance in me that said, no matter how spiritually evolved I feel that I am sometimes, there was an arrogance in me that said, I am going to teach you today what you need to know. I am going to be your teacher and I'm going to stare you down and tell you what you've done wrong. And I'm going to feel really good for it. And when he just looked at me and said nothing, no apology, no nothing, what he basically did is stare me down and send a giant finger in the air in his way to say, you are not my teacher and I am not listening. And I don't care.
Yeah.
So by the time I walked out, was I angrier or lighter?
Hangrier?
Yeah. Unless, like, if Dr. Phil were there, he would have said, so how is that working for you, Trace? Yeah. And it really was. It really was anger at me. Nobody else in that room but me. Me staring me down, his stubbornness to give in, my own stubbornness to give in, staring me back at my face. One will against another, neither one giving, neither one bending. He was me. I got it. He was me.
Yeah, that's a hard one. That's a hard one to get.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And in that particular instance, some of them have been really easy. In that particular instance, it was a hard one to resolve too. Let me tell you, it was literally a 24-hour process of forgive me. I love you. I love you. I love you. I'm sorry. And even that wasn't quite shifting it, which meant there had to be some energy or entity or something that was in the way anchoring it. Because it wasn't until I was in that classroom inspired to be something other than angry, wanting to raise myself higher than that anger, that it shifted, really shifted. So I'd made a huge, huge dent in it. And I'm sure that if I'd spent another, 8 hours on and off, forgive me, that it would have moved. But it was probably the most difficult Ho'oponopono that I had ever done.
Hmm.
And I've done some pretty interesting ones. But this one must have been very deeply ingrained within me, and there was a huge resistance.
Do you think, though, when we do it on ourselves, it's a little bit more sticky?
Well, it's all on ourselves, right?
Right, yeah.
It's all on ourselves. So I think it's just that this particular issue was really sticky. Right. It was connected to something in my past that I was just reticent to forgive. To find compassion for and to forgive. That's the only answer I can come up with, is that it just was hitting something really rock solidly concrete that I was just not going to give up and forgive. Yeah. Yeah.
But I find often, though, when we're doing it for somebody else, even though it's for us, it seems easier.
Yeah.
But when we're doing it for ourselves, there's this stickiness that can just...
And you can
convince yourself that you're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you're not.
Well, you know what I think it is a little bit? Is that when we're doing it for somebody else, or when part of ourself says, I'm doing it for them, I'm showing up for them, that you really are showing up.
Yeah.
All of you is present.
Yeah.
To do that good job. Whereas if you're doing it for yourself, then maybe not all of you showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that spirit that was really hurt isn't showing up.
Right.
That soul is just flown right out of the room. So I'm doing it in a rather half-hearted way because I don't have to show up fully because nobody else is involved.
Right.
I'm not doing it for anybody else.
Although sort of you were doing it for him. Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mind you, I'm not so sure because I was so angry at him at that particular moment in time that it was the part of me that I got to tell you wasn't feeling too charitable.
Why hear ya?
Wasn't feeling too charitable. I think I'll just clean me up. But you know, ho'oponopono, that doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So why I like it for mothers or fathers that come into my office or in a classroom is because it does work. Because they can literally do the clearing for themselves, and they can watch their child change their dynamic without having to drag their child to see somebody or try to figure out who's going to help my child. My child's only 5 and they can't really communicate well. The parent can do that work for themselves and for the child all at one time. And they can do it in their living room, in their family room, in my office. Because the chances that they'll be more present because it's their child that they are trying to help while they are helping themselves. In other words, you're right. We tend to make the other the priority. But the bonus is, even if you've made the other the priority, it still cleans you up.
Right.
And it really does. If you're a sensing person, I mean, versus a senseless person. And I don't mean senseless as in you're stupid. I just mean senseless in the sense that you don't have the ability turned on to feel subtle energy shifts. If you are a sensing person at any level, when you are doing this ho'oponopono work, you can feel it pulling from the other person. If you were to make your mug of tea your mother, and you are working on the problem that you could see so clearly in your mother, which is just driving you crazy. And you were cleaning up yourself of the problem of the oneness that she has brought to your attention. And you literally say to yourself, this mug in front of me is my mother. That's my mother. And you are looking at the mug. You are looking at the sky, the divine. And you are literally saying, forgive me. I love you. I am sorry. You will feel an energy drawing from that mug that is your mother because you've said, it's my mother. Mm. You will feel an energy drawing from that mug into you and then up through the top of your head as you say, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you is the power word that moves it out. Thank you is the power word that descends new truth.
Mm.
Forgive me, I love you are the words that start pulling like the goo out of us, even if we don't really understand the goo.
Right.
Anyway, it's lovely. It's lovely and it's simple.
Yeah.
It's lovely and it's simple. And it really is quite powerful and you can see changes. You can see changes in people. We have a cat.
We have a cat. He's decided that he wants to play.
Yes, that's wishing to play. So if you're hearing the crash, booming, banging, it's really not us. We're not playing as we're talking. It's this lovely cat.
We do like to play, but yes, he's decided right now that he's going to play with the
We're not ruffling these pages of the magazine. It's the cat.
Yeah, we're looking for new material.
Yes, okay. Perhaps the cat is drawing our attention to something that really needs to be spoken about.
Oh, yes.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. He's funny, all right.
What was the page?
Go.
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 Go. So that's one of the things that I wanted to introduce tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy.
Right.
Because it's easy. Because it does
work. And
we
can all do it.
Yeah, we can all do it. We can all do it. And really, honestly, I don't think there's much more that I've missed from every tape that I've ever listened to, from the book that I've read. By the way, the book is Zero Limits. It was Joe Vitale that actually wrote the book. He went in search of Dr. Hulen through a series of, you know, coincidences and pathways. He went in search of this man to learn this from him. And he has put together the book. So he is not the founder of the technique, nor is Dr. Hulen. The founder is this shamanic woman who I believe is no longer
Kahuna,
walking this earth.
Probably.
Yeah.
Kahuna.
And so, but Joe Vitale, who is the, he is the author of The Attractor Factor.
Oh.
So I think that's the book that brought him quite a lot of fame and notoriety.
Right.
So this is his book, Zero Limits. So the whole technique and all of that is brought forward in that or the audiobook. So it was the audiobook that I listened to first. And it wasn't a particularly good idea to be listening to it while I was driving to Hamilton that day, because it started to change something in the consciousness of me as I was driving. And I thought, if I don't turn this thing off right now, I'm going to go flying into one of the guardrails. And literally, it was just from having him and Dr. Hulen start to explain the technique and start to give examples of how this worked. So it's very repetitive in the sense that it is the simplest technique I think that I have ever seen. It never changes. And it's always the same. You start with taking responsibility for the problem, understanding that all problems are your problems. Further understanding that just because you're taking responsibility for the problem doesn't mean that you are to blame. It means that you have a high enough consciousness that you can. And that you know how to do this because you know how to do this technique. So this technique allows for our vessel, the technology of us, to reconcile darkness and light, to braid it together within ourselves, flying out through the top of our head, just by the words that are spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So it is taking responsibility, understanding that this problem is your problem because it's a problem of the oneness. That you can take responsibility for this because you know how to do so without doing harm to yourself or another. That's important, without doing harm right. to yourself or another, right? And that it's simple. Forgive me. I love you. I am sorry. There are people that look at me a little sideways because they say, well, I don't believe in God.
Right.
So I can't do this, Tracy, because you're talking to a divine energy and I don't believe in God. And I said, okay, well, do you believe that you have an auric field? And they say, well, yes, I do, consciously.
Right.
A lot of people don't believe that subconsciously, but they believe it consciously, so that's fine. Okay, so you understand you have an auric field. Well, the last layer of your auric field is your divine mind. So if you can't get your head wrapped around the fact that you are talking to a divine matrix, a source, a divine matrix of light, a universal energy, a God, a Krishna, an Allah, if you cannot get your head wrapped around that without a whole heap load of judgment, then just recognize that you are talking to the farthest away layer of your own auric field, your divine mind, and asking that divine mind for forgiveness. For you are clearly separate from that divine mind. You have separated yourself from that far away portion of your auric field. You have to have, because right. that part of your auric field, the divine mind, does contemplate and get unconditional love. It does know that you are not separate.
Yeah.
It does know all that. So if you want, you're talking to that. You're just talking to yourself. At a very deep level, 15 feet out in all directions, if you cannot get your head around, for the reasons of religion or spirituality, you just cannot get your head wrapped around that. Which means that an atheist can do this, unless the atheist does not believe in an auric field.
Right.
But even science is starting to believe in an auric field,
mm-hmm.
but they call it the biofield. It's the biofield. So it's that simple.
You know, one of probably the biggest issues we have is around self-worth. How could we use that to assist us to understand our real true worth instead of the stuff we've been taught as children or things that we've picked up as, well, in every experience we've had?
Okay, well, explore it then.
Okay.
Like if you were in my office and that was your question, I'd say, okay, explore it. How have you, Lori, suffered with this idea of low self-worth? How's that shown up in your world? Have you walked around for a portion of your childhood or even into the now, feeling like you didn't matter? Feeling or thinking that you weren't important? That everybody else should come first?
Giving power away to others? Okay. Thinking they're better?
Thank you. So in other words, thinking they're better is the lie that says I'm not enough.
Right.
That is the lie of the second chakra. Uh-uh. I am not enough. The lie of the first chakra is I am not safe. Uh-huh. I am not protected. The lie of the third chakra, I am not good. Mm. The lie of the fourth chakra, I am separate. I am unlovable. So you're talking about the lie of the second chakra.
Oh, keep going. What's the fifth?
There isn't, actually.
Oh,
The lies sit in the first four chakras.
That makes sense.
If you heal the lies of the first four chakras, then you stand in truth. And as you stand in truth, you find your voice. And as you stand in truth, you perceive through third eye with clarity. And as you live in truth, then you have this knowing of your connection.
Right.
Right? So the knowing and the vocalizing and the perception, they all come into line when you are literally no longer walking in lies. There was a psychologist who I was thinking of taking a course of his that was offered on the internet. I found it late one night. I don't normally surf the internet. there just isn't time in a day. And I just intrigued me. Because one of the exercises that I do in this class, Psychology of Disease at the Institute of Holistic Nutrition, is an exercise on mind addiction for the purpose of teaching the nutritionist that you can be addicted to more things than just chocolate, alcohol, drugs, and different foods. Mm-hmm. That I wanted them to really see what the potential mind addictions were that they had fallen into. And how they had affected their life, their food choices, their lifestyle choices. So when I was reading this, I was intrigued because the first header of this psychologist or psychiatrist's office was his belief that the greatest addiction plaguing humanity at this time was the addiction to living in lack of integrity. Oh. Which translates into the addiction to living in lies, which is the addiction to not standing in my truth and operating from truth, which means it's the addiction to living in separation. Because when you are living in lies and living in that dishonesty of any one or all of those, then you are living in separation from your connection with the divine, which is at crown, from your connection to third eye, so that you can perceive from clarity. You are living in separation from that.
Aren't we all living in separation? Almost.
Well, I mean, no, there's moments. I don't think all of us are. I think that we can't say that when there are people like the Dalai Lama that walk this earth. I don't think we can say that when we see some of what we see with the monks in Tibet. I don't think we can say that. But I think that we as humanity have struggled quite a lot with this. And I also think that it's interesting that at this time, the end of 2009, the beginning of 2010, is exactly the time where they choose to put out this Avatar movie. Mm-hmm. And that is the whole theme of this Avatar movie. It's about belonging. It's about the law of one. It's about oneness connection. It's about how much humanity has lived in separation and how disconnected from understanding the oneness of all that we have become. So I think we are mostly living in disconnection and separation from the oneness, for sure. And sometimes that is, I live in disconnection from the oneness because I arrogantly think I am better than it and that I can dominate it. That is science. Science. Right. 300 years, science has wished to know nature, to understand nature for the purpose of learning how to dominate it.
Yeah.
Versus where the native Indians were. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they wanted to know about nature. They surely did. They wanted to know about nature, but not for the purpose of dominating it, for the purpose of living in harmony with it. For the purpose of living in harmony with it.
Yeah.
The churches, before science took over 300 years ago, the churches took that. They took that doctrine, they made it their own. They called it theirs. But the problem with what they took is they took it and then they put their own slant on it. They took it and then they wanted to control. We like what they had to say, these Aboriginals and these natives. We think it's sound thinking, but we want to control how that knowledge is disseminated to humanity. We want it all to go through us. We want it all to filter through us so that we will be seen as the holders of that supreme knowledge.
Yeah.
When science took over about 300 years ago, they wanted to take that power away from the church. They changed the operating system, the mission statement. And it's still the mission statement of today. And when I got really quiet about it, I went, well, why is it that we don't return back to the mission statement that was? And what I heard was a small, tiny, soft voice saying, because we think that that mission statement is going to come with the same conditions that it came with all those years ago when the churches claimed it. Because we have forgotten to remember that they didn't own it. They didn't copyright it. They didn't have the rights to it. That they weren't even the ones that created it. But we've forgotten to remember that. So we don't go back. We don't go back to reclaim that mission statement that was a better mission statement. That was a mission statement that would do more to help us at this time than the one that we have now. But we don't go there. Or we are struggling. We are starting to go there. We're struggling to go there.
Mm-hmm.
We are. And I think one of the struggles is exactly that. We don't want to leave this one behind because we don't want to go there and end up with all of those conditions forced upon us again. And all of that lack of freedom to get our knowledge from anywhere. And in fact, really, that could never be anymore with the internet the way it is. Mm-hmm. We just cannot control knowledge the way that we used to control knowledge.
Yeah.
So yeah, so addictions of the mind. So the newest thing in my office, which is actually kind of cool, other than this Ho'oponopono, now it's not new, but it's new to me. One of the women that I work with, I just think that she's an angel that has come here to help us, like really just a descended angel, a true angel. So bright. She was talking to me, perked my ears up the last session that we were doing. She was saying that the direction that she was getting now was that she needed to help people with their soul addictions. And I was just like, my ears just perked up. Soul addiction, you're speaking my language. I'm the nutritionist. Are you kidding me? Now, this hadn't occurred to me. I thought I was doing really well in school by teaching all of these students about mind addictions. Now you're talking to me about soul addictions. And if you look at the auric field, the soul body is two layers beyond the mental body.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So it is literally outside of the mind.
Right.
Right? On your way to divine body.
Right.
Soul addictions. Addictions at a soul level. Oh my God. Wow. I guess if you'd given me a couple of years, I might have thought of it myself. But I was so happy that it got delivered. Soul addictions. This started to answer the question of why, when I had worked so hard to release these addictive states of mind in people's thinking patterns, why sometimes they did not shift. Because I'd only cleansed them to this place.
To the mind.
To the mind. Cleanse them from the mental body and inward, but not anything outside of that. The soul was still holding this need to create in this way, and believing that this was the only way it could create. Soul addictions to suffering, living right. in pain, struggling. In fact, there was a client that I was working with a couple of nights ago over the phone, and it was brilliant what I was hearing from her. Soul addictions to rebellion too. Soul addictions to rebellion too. Rebellion to love, rebellion to mother's love. Soul addictions to, what was it? To God's love. Mm. Soul addictions to being loved. Soul addictions to intimacy. Mm. These were rebellion to. Like those indigo children.
Right.
Who are rebelling against all sorts of systems. I thought, right. man, I wonder whether indigo children have a couple of soul addictions that in time need to be corrected.
And they do.
Hers was not only, what else did she teach me that night? Rebellion to dot, dot, dot. And rejection of.
Oh.
Soul addictions to rejection of self. To rejection of love. To rejection of beauty. To the rejection of seeing the truth of myself. In other words, this soul being so changed by the lifetimes of darkness that it had lived here in the 26,000 year cycle, so changed, so battered, so shadowed, that it didn't even know how to create a different life for itself in a physical body here on Earth. Couldn't even see anymore a different possibility.
Wow.
How cool is that?
It's pretty exciting work.
It's very exciting. It's absolutely very exciting. It's very, very, very exciting to see what is the shift and what does that look like. It was interesting. I cleared a soul addiction to needing to sacrifice myself and a soul addiction to needing to suffer and live in pain at a soul level. And a very interesting thing happened. I have been doing the same thing in my classrooms for the last 5 years with regard to assignments and how they're structured. And and I hate marking papers. Can't stand it. It's the only part of the job that I don't like. And I give out this little 5-mark quiz in class number 3 of 8. And it's just another thing for me to mark. But it's easy to mark, but it still takes, when there's 40 people in a class or 30 people in a class, it still takes a half an hour of my time to go through all of those and then another half an hour to put them all down on the sheet and record them. And it's like, oh, hate that part of my job. Well, I've been doing that little quiz in class number 3 for the last 5 years. And it was only a few days ago in a classroom that for the first time ever, it occurs to me, just hand the pages back to the students. Make sure that nobody gets theirs and let the students mark them. It's a simple true and false multiple choice, easy to mark. They'll be able to do it. You'll be finished in 4 minutes. Why did I not think about that ever before in 5 years? Did I ever structure that way ever?
You wanted to suffer.
Suffering, sacrificing, struggle, and living in pain. Marking papers is painful to me.
Right.
It was fascinating. It was fascinating. It was so easy for me to see. Not only that, I feel like one of my guides had transmitted that solution to me at the beginning of class. There were 4 or 5 students in that class that said that they heard that.
Oh.
That they heard that. They heard that. They got that transmission, that that's what should happen. We should just be marking everybody else's papers. And I'm like, who delivered that? Who delivered that piece of wisdom? that not only I could hear it, but four or five other students got the knowing, got the idea.
Wow.
It was profound. Like you just don't even know how much I hate marking papers. And when I saw how simple that solution was, and for 5 years it had eluded me, that solution, how I could make this a little bit easier on myself, had just passed me by for 5 years. And I asked later, I said, is that just happened in that classroom, is that a direct result of the releasing of addiction at a soul level to suffering, struggling, living in pain, and sacrificing myself? And it was like, yes, 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 and yes.
Wow.
So what that did is if that in fact was my guide, and I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
it in fact took the mute off my guide. My guide could now speak and tell me and give me ways that it had probably been dying to give me for years, but could not give me because I had put a hand over its mouth to support me in where I was.
In your addiction.
To allow me to be in that addictive state for as long as I wanted to be in that addictive state or needed to be in that addictive state before it was just too much suffering. It was interesting that it came the day after I decided I wasn't going to be that angry.
Right.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Very. Well, Tracy, we're going to have you come back. It's been...
Oh, are we done?
Yeah, we are.
Oh, my God. Wild,
isn't
time
it?
Flies. Are we? Well, I don't know why I was having a good time.
It would definitely.
And the cat seemed to be having
he was
a good
definitely
time.
Having a good time too. Well, yeah, I hope to have you back soon. Actually, so we'll talk about that.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So we have another show coming up right now.